When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Save big on your Memorial Day barbecue, all in the Kroger app. Get 3-pound rolls of juicy 80% lean ground beef for $3.49 a pound with a digital coupon. Then get select varieties of flavorful Powerade, Body Armor Super Drink, or Arizona Tea for 77 cents each, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to a brand episode of The Wrap right here on the Fike Media Network. Happy Monday to you all as we are 2 weeks away from WrestleMania Saturday and Sunday, live from The Link in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. It is going to be the biggest WrestleMania of all time, XL style, and we're going to cover it for you right here on The Wrap. And I am Keela Cash, and by my side, as always, is my co-captain, my right hand, the sometimes advocate for the rapidly improving Von Wagner, who holds Mr. Stone like a baby every Tuesday on NXT. I got to add that in there as well. I bring to you back on The Wrap, as always, the one, the only, Salty Scott Young. Welcome back, Salty.
Thank you for having me, Keela. As always, it's a pleasure to chop it up and talk all things WWE. I'm excited about the conversations we're going to have. I appreciate Big Daddy V just hitting the Westbrook on Robert Stone any chance he can. I'm here for it. But yeah, great conversation. Looking forward to today's show.
Me too. And you know, this is a very exciting time of year when we bring on a special guest who is basically our Mr. Rap WrestleMania. He's been here the last couple of years with breaking news items and talking about the return of Cody Rhodes, for example, and will he finish his story and predicting returns in WWE. And look where we are right now, the biggest time of year, WrestleMania XL. We cannot do a WrestleMania preview special without the one, the only, Jeremy Finestone. Welcome back, Jeremy.
How the hell do I follow up with that kind of introduction? Good Lord, it's like you're actually paying me to show up or something. That is amazing. Such flattery. I really appreciate it. I really love coming on this show before like the Rumble and Mania and the big events where we just kind of like see what next big thing is coming down the pike and what we can see is coming and how it delivers. And sometimes they hit you with something completely out of left field. Speaking of baseball references.
Yes, it is almost that time of year as well. Opening day is upon us. Very exciting. And that is around WrestleMania time as well. And Jeremy,
got ninth inning shenanigans coming up, you know, it's like,
you know, that word has been said. You know, we said third inning, seventh inning stretch. Now we are at the bottom of the ninth inning. Woo. We have arrived. Scott's shaking his head because his state does not have any true professional baseball representation. But I know what you do have, Scott, if I'm not mistaken. You got those adorable, cute, chunky flying squirrels.
Yeah, we got flying squirrels, but I can tell you this much. Them flying squirrels didn't waste $180 on half of an Achilles. I can tell you that much, okay? I can tell you that. And yeah, I am a little salty that VA don't have no baseball team. We had the Richmond Braves, made us feel like we were important, like we were close to Atlanta. We weren't. So
you don't feel any like regional belonging to the Nationals or the Orioles?
Nah. Right. You know, like I've been to a Nationals game.
I get it.
It was cool. It's got to be in the V. It's got to be in the two up, two down, man. To call it a home team.
Yeah. All right.
And the flying squirrels aren't it.
They're cute. We saw the mascot. They're adorable. They're really sweet. They don't scare anybody, but you have a team. And that is something that you can rep, you know, the Nationals, the Phillies, even. Not the Phillies. Oh, come on.
Nah. I'm not doing no Philadelphia teams. No, you know, nah, I'm good on that. If they are not in the two up, two down, and I can't go and drive to them, you know, without over, if it takes it over an hour to go drive to them, I'm good. I'm good.
So what we're saying is, unless the ball is something that you have to hold with more than one hand, you're not interested.
That's it. That's it. Right. You know, Richmond ain't, you know, I'm in Richmond. Why, we got a Coliseum. What we doing? You know? I'm just saying, man. And speaking on that, why can't we get some of these smaller shows to come around Virginia? You know? Virginia just don't get no love, no sports, no wrestling. We don't get nothing.
Maybe this is your year. Maybe this is your summer. Maybe you have put it out there into the world so delicately and so passionately that the world will only do nothing but respond in kind.
Yeah.
I don't think so, but I was hoping.
Last show I got in Virginia was Gangrel and Joey Janela versus the Hardy Boys. Joey was great, but that's about it.
I went to a Raw 2 weeks ago that was 10 minutes from my house. I decided that I did not want to stick around for Grayson Waller and Cody Rhodes, right? And so I left after the match started. I knew it went to a commercial break. I was back in my door before the show was off the air. It was great. Right out of the parking lot, watched a show on TV. I felt like I missed nothing. From where I was sitting, it would have been an awful view of the Paul Heyman confrontation.
Yeah, I don't know if you can tell, but I look like the Grinch right now because that's green with envy. But it is what it is. You know what I'm saying? Good kudos to you, but yeah, I'm mad.
I just had to give you that live recap because this is the rap. This is all WWE.
You didn't have to. You didn't have to rap that one. We didn't have to recap that one.
It was a good time. It was a good time. If you ever come to California when a Raw is coming, I will take you myself.
All right. Well, there you go.
Absolutely.
Let's get back on track here.
Sorry about that.
You know, I love the sidebars. I sit back, observe, and listen as we take another sidebar, which is our favorite second topic on the show, and that is the NBA Western Conference standings right now. We have a few weeks left in the regular season, and as of right now, I only care about the play-in situation because right now we have the Lakers in the ninth spot, 38-32. 6-4 in their last 10, and my Warriors, 36-33, 4-6 in their last 10. And they've got to watch out for these Houston Rockets who are trying to get into the 10th spot. They are 9-1 in their last 10. Danger zone. To close out the top 10, we have the Kings and the Mavericks also in the play-in situation if the season ended today. Scott, your thoughts on where the Lakers stand as of tonight?
I've been pretty steadfast and strong about them finishing in that sixth spot and not having to really worry about the play-in. It's a lot of ground to cover. A lot of teams are playing well. We're on an East Coast trip. A couple of these other teams are on an East Coast trip, so that doesn't really help us in the Western Conference standings. I'm going to go ahead and tell you now, the Warriors not making the playoffs. They're not making the play-in either. I'm going to go ahead and let you know that right now. I think the Lakers are going to end up in that seventh spot. I don't see us getting the six. I think it's too big of a hill to climb. We don't know how to win games back-to-back. But I think we get to that seventh and we don't have to worry about single elimination stuff because that's when it gets real hairy. And that's where we have to rely on people like Anthony Davis. And I just don't want anybody to sneeze on him before the game and then he like slips or something.
Most definitely. Most definitely. So do you think that it's possible mm-hmm. that the Houston Rockets leapfrog the Warriors?
Oh, I think anything's possible. I don't care who do it. I don't care who do it.
You are scared by the most highly rated 9-10 matchup between the Lakers and the Warriors. You know it scares you. I know you don't want to see it because they lost. So they lost last Saturday. So.
Oh, we didn't have AD. We didn't have AD.
Oh,
that loss doesn't really bother me. We didn't have AD. We still don't have Vando. Like that doesn't bother me. I don't, as much as I hate the guy, I don't want to play Steph Curry in a closeout game. threes beat twos. We shoot a lot of twos. They shoot a lot of threes. So I just don't. Anybody can get hot one game, and I know we all watch a little college basketball, so we done seen what's going on with that. So all it takes is one game to get hot. Oh, well, I guess Jeremy doesn't, but I ain't know. I figure March Madness, everybody got some money in a pool or somehow. So
I'm on New Japan Cup, buddy. That was the only bracket I've been
out. All right, well, yeah, let's go Tar Heels. But yeah, so I got the Lakers finishing in that 7th spot, and I got the Warriors finishing in that 11th spot.
Oh, you troll. Okay, fine, whatever. But Jeremy, like, for those of you who are listening and not watching visually, Jeremy is the best. He's the best mime we have on our network of families here, and he's just tremendous, and he will try to break us at various points today. I would try not to look directly at him for fear that I will lose my shit on the show, so I shall remain calm.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Lies.
Kiwa, can we get this back on track? Come on.
Come on. You know, Jeremy, you've been on this show for what, over 2 years sporadically as a guest. You know there is no track that we are on, ever.
I just thought I would be on my best behavior tonight, since we're in, like, everyone is on their best performances going into WrestleMania.
Okay, we're in tip-top shape. We are in WrestleMania form as we finally get to some WWE talk, which is Monday Night Raw going down live in Raleigh, North Carolina, sold out building. I think, what, 10 sold out in a row. Congrats to WWE on that. And we're going to talk about a great match that I thought we saw on Monday Night Raw. Maybe I'm mistaken, but I really enjoyed the Creed Brothers versus DIY. A great match. As Scott and I talked about before, I was torn. I was conflicted. I did not know who was going to win. I love the Creeds. I love DIY. Both teams were just great down the stretch. I was biting on these near falls, but ultimately DIY got the win, and they will be moving on to WrestleMania, their first WrestleMania ever. They've been in the company for 10 years now, and they're able to be a part of this crazy six-pack tag team ladder match for the Undisputed Tag Team titles. I feel for the Creed Brothers. I was hoping for a possible second chance entry. That will not be the case, because the last two spots will go to SmackDown. So it's like harsh WrestleMania realities. Try again next year. I wanted Julius to be in this match to do some crazy stuff. It's not meant to be. But the match itself, Scott, on Monday was marvelous. I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, it was a very good match. You know, one thing I do appreciate about a lot of these matches these last couple weeks, especially when it comes to WrestleMania, you know, for so long, it's almost been a given that even people who lose in these, you know, WrestleMania qualifying matches or so-and-so, they somehow end up on the card. We've always had the Dre, that's 30 spots, you know, then there's some other big multi-match, then there's the big tag team match. So there's always been some way of doing that. This year, there does seem to be some legit consequences to losing matches. You know, losing these matches. Chad Gable, here's a guy sitting on the outside looking in. You know, so there's, and these are fan favorites. Like, Chad's somebody that the people have been rocking with since his little girl saw him get big boyed, you know, saw him get bodied. And ever since then, they've been rocking with him. So it's, the consequences are something I really enjoy. The match is really good. You know, one thing I saw that Dave Meltzer said, and I don't normally bring his name up on this show very often, but one thing I saw that he said that I really agree with, and there are certain guys that you have to, and girls that you have to do this with, you do have to make some people special. Like, you do need to keep some people special as far as not losing, just being dominant at all times. They are not really doing that. Like, the Creed Brothers, they've already lost a tag title match. They've lost multiple tag team matches. Like, they don't feel special. They feel like more of a, let's see what they're going to do this time. You know, it's, they almost feel like a crew. They almost feel like the cruiserweights back in the day. Like, let's throw them out there and see what big spot are we going to get. And I think there is something to that, where you have to start keeping some of these guys and girls that you call up. Some of them you need to start protecting a little bit more, because the Creed Brothers now, to me, they just feel like an exciting team that's going to pull out a couple really cool moves, but we know they're not going to win the big one in the end.
And I hope that's not the case long term, because they're special, especially Julius Creed. And I hope post WrestleMania they get that push. But what I love about WWE these days is that wins and losses matter. You get to see the post game reaction to a match now backstage, and you get to get the sound bites of how they feel about the loss, and they're selling it. They're disappointed. They're not happy about, oh, we tried our best and we gave it our all. They're upset. They're not going to WrestleMania. Like, the job is not done. The job is not finished. What is there to be happy about? Crow Kobe, like, we did that, but we didn't win. We did not get to go to WrestleMania. We didn't get to have our moment. We didn't get to win anything. So I do like that internal struggle with Chad Gable recently, and the Creeds asked to say, these were our WrestleMania hopes and dreams. And I think that should be the messaging moving forward. For many years, it was everybody gets on the WrestleMania card, come hell or high water. Now you have to fight, scratch, and claw for that positioning. And if you don't get it, oh well. And now that gives you motivation for next year, and actually for the rest of this year, to get better and to get on main PLE cards and be competitive and win. I do like that. It's not give everybody a cookie. It's WrestleMania season. It's, you got to earn your slot. And sometimes hard losses have to happen to get there. And I appreciate that. But Jeremy, your thought on this match and the Creed's losing ultimately?
I was completely fine with the Creed losing. This was a generational NXT dream match, wrestled in the NXT TakeOver style, that opened up a Raw. And I'm sitting here thinking about 2024 and just kind of baffled that that actually is what we are like looking at now, is that we have DIY of Johnny Gargano and Tommaso Ciampa, who were basically main eventing TakeOvers from 2015 to 2018, right? Like 2019 all the way through. I remember Johnny Gargano had the Adam Cole match in TakeOver Brooklyn before WrestleMania 35. So to me, it was no surprise whatsoever that Triple H looked at these guys and said, no, it is your time to be at WrestleMania. The Creed brothers, they haven't even been on the roster for a year, let alone their time with the company. And their future's bright. It's so bright that I am not at all worried about the fact that the first year out is not their time, but it will be going forward. Heel turn, couple of interesting developments with them, and they are just in the hunt coming around the pike for next year. So I'm not worried about them whatsoever. But yeah, I looked at this the finish and the match, and I was just like, everything about it was what I needed it to be. And I just find it really interesting that they couldn't just do a Raw Tag Team Championship match for Mania when you have the main event of Night One being the biggest tag team match that you could possibly do. Everything else is second, right? So you have to throw all of them into this big old like melting pot of teams and just come out with a result. And I don't expect Judgment Day to come out with the titles for a variety of reasons, but DIY is definitely a team that is viable coming out of that match.
I agree. I hope so. I saw them coming out of this in a better position than they were coming in. Hopefully that carries over post-WrestleMania season. It hurts they're not going to be on the card, but you have to feel that way sometimes. I think it's good for people not to be able to make it to WrestleMania. It makes you want it more for next year. It's not everybody deserves a spot. Sometimes it's just not your year. It hurts. It sucks, but it gets better. And they're still the night before WrestleMania. You know, we still have the Andre Memorial Battle Royal. Somebody will get some shine on SmackDown before win the Dre. And maybe that could be a Creed brother. I don't know. But I do like the fact they tried. They talked about it, and I think they'll be better for it heading into next year's WrestleMania. I do have high hopes for them. They are great. I am not nervous yet.
I will throw out this example. There is notably a wrestler on the WWE roster that was held out of WrestleManias at the last minute, found themselves crying under the bleachers about their fate, and now they're main eventing against The Rock, Roman Reigns, in WrestleMania. So, you know, you do have pathways if the beginning is dire.
Very true, indeed. I can't with you sometimes. As we move on to our next topic, which is Cody Rhodes calling out The Rock.
Nice segue.
It was, I know how, you know, the segues are the segues. I try to get us back on the track. And Scott and I had this conversation last week on the show, and we talked about how Cody Rhodes has to stop being so emotional, stop crying, and kind of give Rock the business. Now, I thought he was going to give him the business face to face. That will probably be the final Raw before WrestleMania in Brooklyn next week. Probably sold out house at Barclays Center. But this week, Cody apologized on Twitter in advance for what he was going to say about The Rock. And he came out there in his Sunday's best suit, like it's Easter Sunday. He came out there and he proceeded to blast The Rock on commentary or on the mic during his promo. And he talked about The Rock's positioning as the member of the board of directors on TKO, talked about how he cried about how the fans wanted Cody in the main event spot of WrestleMania. He cried his way to change things up heading into WrestleMania. So he's a real crybaby. He talked about The Rock's mother, a lovely woman, by the way, but how do you talk about my mother and how you plan to embarrass me in front of her at WrestleMania? And I loved Cody's energy. He had bars and he had the censorship button at the ready for anything, called The Rock an asshole. That did not get bleeped off the air. He said that The Rock had little dick syndrome when it comes to being ready for WrestleMania. So he had bars on bars on bars for Dwayne. And I really appreciated that. I love the fire. He was ready to go. I am looking forward to a face-to-face confrontation heading into WrestleMania. It will happen most likely the Monday before, and I'm all for that. And then Paul Heyman comes out and he's like, well, my tribal chief says he wants you on SmackDown face-to-face if you come alone. And if you come alone, he will come alone on Friday night. Do you agree to these terms? And Cody does, and that's how the segment ends. But I thought that Cody got some good shots off at The Rock, who's been firing shots on social media and on SmackDown in recent weeks. And I did miss The Rock not giving us that Friday social media content that we've been craving. He'll be back hopefully soon to give us what we need to get through our Friday afternoon. But Jeremy, your thought on Cody Luther King going off on the mount on one Dwayne The Rock Johnson?
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
So Cody could never hope to compete with The Rock on the mic. And thankfully, he did not try to. He tried to do his own thing, and it managed to work really, really well. I thought his passion came out. I thought when he was able to do a version of the bless his heart kind of a reaction for The Rock when he talked about the mother and, you know, like, and Rock, your mother, she's a very nice lady. And just moved on. I was just like, classy babyface action right there. I am into that. The whole energy about Cody coming to this makes me want to see Cody versus The Rock almost more than I want to see Cody versus Roman. And I don't know if that's the intention, but right now their jabs with each other are far more interesting than what they have got going on with The Rock and Roman and Roman and Cody. And I also think about the belt scenario, and then I think about what Cody is willing to do with a weight belt or any kind of belt for that matter, after the AEW whipping that he took from MJF. And I'm thinking about the main event of WrestleMania here, and I'm just, Cody's going to get wrecked, and he is going to take those belt shots, and this promo's all going to pay off. And they have cultivated this so fantastically that I'm just like, this is what I'm here for WrestleMania. Cody is playing his part perfectly. The Rock is playing his part perfectly. Roman is playing his part perfectly. And Seth has managed to carve himself a role that did not fit, and now he is managing to make his position feel as valuable as well. I am here for all of it. I thought the rundown was great, and I thought that Cody managed to maintain a babyface energy without trying to compete with what The Rock and Roman present on the mic.
And that was eerily apparent on Friday night that we'll get to it, but I felt that Cody's solo promo going off on The Rock was more compelling than what he did face-to-face with Roman Reigns on SmackDown, and that is a danger zone that WWE's in. I want Cody to obviously finish his story at WrestleMania, but the heat right now, as of today, as we are recording this episode, is I would love to see Cody and The Rock go one-on-one, because that is where the beef is more so than Roman, and that should not be the case. I think that both main events for WrestleMania Night 1 and 2 should have equal value heading into it, and the tag team match is going to be very good. I'm very intrigued by what The Rock is going to do first time in the ring in 11 years, but Seth has elevated himself to be a great premier tag team partner for Cody. Roman is Roman, but I do feel as if I am more intrigued by the possibilities of Cody and The Rock going at it, because that is where the animus is heading into WrestleMania. But Scott, your take on the promo that Cody cut, did he satisfy you in terms of what you wanted dating back to last week, or did you expect a wee bit more?
The promo was good. Wasn't quite the, it was real good, but it just wasn't the, It wasn't the slam dunk that I'm hoping for. You know, we've seen Cody cut some great promos. You know, especially when it comes to if you're gonna target The Rock, like if you're gonna go at The Rock, like when I think of going at The Rock, I think of a lot of Cena stuff. Like, and Cena went at that man to the point where The Rock legitimately had to come back. Like, I don't feel like The Rock would need to even say anything. Like, this to me feels like, it feels like a rap battle, like Eminem and MGK. Like, Eminem doesn't need to respond to MGK. You know, MGK could take all the shots he wants. They could be good, but you don't have to respond to them because they ain't that good. You know, Rap Devil was good. It wasn't Rap God. You know what I'm saying? Like, so that's kind of where I'm at with that. And then I do think what you said, Jeremy, you are right about them setting up The Rock, because I think that's your SummerSlam main event right there. Rock versus Cody Rhodes for that undisputed WWE Universal title. Roman's going to be gone for a while. Rock could try to establish himself as the tribal chief by going to get that title back. You know, the final boss, the tribal chief's gone. So he'll say, well, I'll take over the reins then. I think it sets it up perfect, especially when Rock pins Cody Rhodes night one. You got it all set up perfectly.
Did you see the Easter egg on Pharaoh?
I didn't see the Easter egg. I saw Pharaoh, but not the Easter egg.
Pharaoh had a bandana
on. Yes.
And the bandana said, The Rock is a cat.
Okay.
Do I need to pay it? I will.
You don't have to. Yeah. I mean, Keela doesn't mind. I think I've said it before. So.
Because yeah, Cody is family friendly. I saw this on his story too. Pharaoh, who made the trip to North Carolina with his cute little self, he had a bandana on his neck and said, The Rock is a cat.
I mean, The Rock called out Pharaoh.
Yes.
Call out a guy's dog.
Yes.
I'm sorry. Like,
all bets are
off. You throw down for calling, for going after a dupe dog.
That's like Cody, a child. It's like going after somebody's child.
Yeah. You know, like, Cody would have given another clap in the face after last week. You talk about my dog, you get another one. You get in the hand from the other. You get in the left hand now. You got the right hand before, you get the left hand now.
Listen, Pharaoh deserved his moment. I was hoping he'll get it. Called Rock a pussy and not so few words, which I was going to say it. I'm a pussy. I appreciated it. Pharaoh said, I am not a shithead. Okay. That is not my name. I'm not a goofy ass dog. I am Pharaoh. I am Cody's dog. I have merch. You can leave me alone. And I still need the face-to-face confrontation. Pharaoh and The Rock in a parking lot. And then Pharaoh runs up on him and he pees on his leg.
How can a stick burn to call a dog goofy? Like, a goofy ass dog? That's a great dog. Yeah, you ever seen a goofy dog? Everyone loves a goofy dog. Oh, whatever. Gosh. Get out of here, Dwayne.
He probably loves that
Read
dog.
Read the room.
He Dwayne loves
probably,
that dog.
He'd probably be backstage playing with that dog every day. That's why he said that.
You're a goofy ass dog.
Yeah, that's what he'd be saying to him for real when he'd be back there with him.
Here, you cute, goofy ass dog. Come over here. Give The Rock a hug.
Yeah.
And since we are mentioning Goofy,
here we go.
I cannot move on to our next topic without saying the following. A Goofy movie is a legendary Disney television movie.
All right. Yeah. I have the Goof Troop theme song perpetually stuck in my head, but that's just me.
Yes.
Is that have people been saying that's not a Disney movie or something?
Oh, no. It is a legendary all-time Disney television movie.
It doesn't get the
movie.
Love because it's not like a classic cinematic like Aladdin or whatever, or Lion King. But, you know, you throw the Goofy movie out there and then you, like, run a TV show afterward. And people are just like, oh, yeah, there's, like, a cash grab. It's a Goofy thing. And then you actually watch it, you're like, yeah, it's legit.
Yeah,
kind of like the Lego really movie, good. You know? Like, you want to dismiss it, but when you watch it, you're like, oh, hot damn.
This is so great.
Yeah.
All right. I just didn't know. Like I thought the Goofy movie was a universally praised and accepted movie.
Keela says it wasn't. So
yeah, that's what I'm saying. That's why I was shocked.
Advocate for wrongness. I mean, let's get this right.
Someone had a sign. I swear to God, there was a fan at a WWE show. It was Raw or SmackDown. And they disparaged a Goofy movie. And he got dragged. He got flayed. On the timeline, the audacity to question the movie integrity and historical significance of a Goofy movie. You do not do that. That direct to home video is a Disney classic. It might not be in the Disney vault, but it is an all-time Disney Channel classic television movie.
I will say this. I would like for people in the Discord, once they hear this, to respond with their reasoning of why Goofy and his kids have like human capability, but Pluto does not.
Thank you. Why does Pluto remain silent and Goofy has a job? He can talk. Max goes to school.
This is your Discord. This is the Discord assignment.
He gets the girl. Like, we need to know the Disney dynamics of how Goofy has his life and Pluto is a dog.
Scott, engaged with the masses about about the Goof Troop movie, the Goofy movie, and then everything else about WrestleMania that is a sidebar after that.
I'm gonna keep it a buck, right? I never really thought about the fact that Goofy has full on capabilities and Pluto is like
a dog.
It kept me up at night.
I've never thought of, and now it's making me think that maybe everything that's going on is in Goofy's head.
Oh my gosh, it's possible. Or it's through the mind of Pluto and he wants to be Goofy.
So this is like some Jacob Ladder shit?
Yeah, that's kind of what I'm on right now.
Because speaking of ladders. Yes. Oh, ladders. Oh, segue alert. I love it. As we segue from Goofy talk to the main event of Monday Night Raw, it was a last woman standing match involving the man Becky Lynch and Nia Jax. And I enjoyed this match. You know, Nia Jax has been very impressive upon her return to WWE. I've liked her work. Her and Becky work great together. And this was a very fun physical bruising match. And Nia Jax was very safe because she realized I cannot hurt this woman 2 weeks out before WrestleMania. I'm going to be very very gentle, but it was still a very brutal match. Chair shots, Samoan drops into the barricade, into the ring post, on the floor, splashes. Becky went through it, and she took bumps on the chairs, on the outside. We had Nia Jax versus the table that was cooperating. She gave up, but they set it back up after the commercial break. But then we got two absolutely insane table spots. We had Becky Lynch muster all the strength she possibly could to deliver a manhandle slam to Nia Jax off the ring apron to the table. And the bump that Jax took was great. And that was not the finish. She got back up and Becky's like, what else I got to do? So Nia, she stumbled her way to the announce table and she, it wasn't like when that fake fall over, like, I got to fall over here. Like, she got up. She was so weak, and she just fell over the table. And then Becky climbed up a ladder, and she delivered not a leg drop. It was a fucking famer, sir, okay? Through the announce table to Nia Jax, and it splat. Pat McAfee's marking out, and he's jumping up and down. He's freaking out. He can't believe what he saw. And that is how Becky Lynch became the last woman standing. A great match, fantastic spectacle, great showing by both ladies. And after the match is over, the women's world champion, Mommy Rhea Ripley, comes out and they go face to face as she says, "Oh, you done now? Are you finished putting yourself through it before WrestleMania? Now it's me and you." They're jaw jacking back and forth as Raw goes off the air. But I really enjoyed this main event. Strong action between Nia and Becky. It ends the feud for now, but still, let's not lose the record here. It's kind of one and one exactly because of a DQ. So they can always revisit this one more time down the road, but great main event to wrap up a pretty good feud, Scott.
Yeah, the match was good. I like their first match better, where Nia got the clean win. I thought that was a better match, but this was fine. A lot of bells and whistles. I thought Nia it probably was to what you said attributed to that. I just didn't think the physicality was there like it was in that first match. Like the first time they locked up in that first match, you could tell Nia was out there to prove a point. This time it just felt like they were kind of going through it. The big spots at the end got the crowd into it. You know, we got to that final destination. Now let's see if maybe we get another women's match with a Liv and Nia, which would be a cool addition to the card. But match was good. Good match.
Yes, it was. Yes, it was very much. Jeremy, your take on this match?
I had a great time with this match. I was actually visiting some family, and I flew back on Tuesday, and I downloaded the Hulu version of Raw, and I watched it there. And so I watched this match, and I watched like the first few minutes, and it's starting to heat up, and then it goes to the commercial break, and it comes back, and all the tables and chairs are in the middle of the ring. And so I'm watching the match, and I realize they cut out about 10 minutes in the middle of the match for the Hulu cut. And so just the way that they went to black was in the same part of the ring that they came back to. And you could just kind of figure out, oh, yeah, hey, except all the tables and chairs were in there. So I went back and I rewatched it, and I enjoyed it even more when I watched it the second time. There were a couple of takeaways that I had from this was, Nia Jax has been more valuable to the main event of the Women's Raw Championship than almost Becky and Rhea have been. And she's not even in the match. She has managed to make both of them look even stronger through losses by her. And as much as we want to give her shit, he understood the assignment coming into 2024 of what she had to do. She had a great Elimination Chamber match. And then she had this match with Becky, in which 2 weeks before Mania, she managed to have a match that looked hard-hitting, but was light as a feather. Like, she did everything in her power to make sure that Becky was untouched for the majority of that match. You know, she took the regular bumps and whatever, but it was like she was not jeopardizing this main event in any way, shape, or form. And then you get to that manhandle slam off the thing. And I haven't seen Nia Jax take a flatter flat back bump than what I saw after there. And I was just like, what am I watching here? This is not what I've seen in the past. So, and then I just saw her sprawled and her eyes splayed out. And she looked like a TV actor when they have the wrestling episode and they get crushed by the actual wrestler. That's what Nia Jax looked like. She sold dying so well by Becky. And then she took the Famouser, like you said, off the thing. And then when it was all said and done, she disappears. And then you have a crowd that's even hotter for Becky and Rhea going into Mania. And if Becky wins, which I'm not sure is a given going into Mania, you still have a Nia Jax. You haven't pinned me, Becky. You still have to pin me. I like everything about this. They have drawn out the Nia Jax rivalry in a way that has felt viable. And Nia Jax is slowly and surely getting the reputation that she has had in the past. And good for her.
Me too. This is a great redemption arc for her. This is well deserved. She's gotten flack from me for a very good reason. I don't take back what I said in the past. But presently, when you make up for it by delivering great performances like she has done since her return to WWE, good for you. That means that she came back, reapplied herself, and she is growing and learning, and she's being safe and taking care of the people she's working with. That's all that matters. She came back better. It reminded me of Braun Strowman. That was another good rehire by WWE nearly 2 years ago, that he was better than he was when he got released back in 2021. So I firmly believe that Nia Jax is still going to be a big difference maker on the show, and she is doing what she got to do. And Becky Lynch, as you said, Jeremy, she's got to pin Nia. These victories are nice, but she's got to pin her. That will come eventually in due time whenever she wins the Women's World Championship. As we segue to our next topic of business, which is NXT, our favorite show, Can't You Tell? And I want to thank Nick from our Discord for offering this topic to us, because we've been talking about the NXT Women's Division for quite some time. But with the recent departure of Tiffany Stratton, we want to get the state of the NXT Women's Division address going, in that it's very lukewarm right now. I don't see a standout babyface. And in conversation, that is very true. We do have some very strong personalities that stand out, but they're green. And then we have people that are polished, but they don't have personalities. And I'm wondering to myself, what can the PC do to flesh out these characters for people that can go in the ring so we can connect with them a bit better? I think about our champion, Lara Valkyria, very talented, personality, not the best. I think about Tatum Paxley. It's a character that I don't love, but it's something. I think about Lash Legend, that she can be over very soon. She is improving, but she's not ready yet. But I'm trying to figure out what they can do to kind of reheat up this division, reestablish it, and make it premiere once again. I go back to a lot of WWE documentaries involving Sasha, Bayley, Charlotte, and Becky, and they were very blessed to have one guy in particular get them through promo class to help them figure out who they are in terms of character. And that person is Dusty Rhodes. And they don't have a Dusty right now that can help navigate in terms of figuring out character work on this show. And if CM Punk is there in Florida on the short term during rehab for his triceps, if he can provide insight on character work and promos, I would greatly appreciate that, because that is lacking. There is a lot of kooky personalities on this show. Some I believe, some I do not. I need some refinement in terms of figuring out who you are as a character. It does not happen overnight, but I do need some seed planting for me to see how we can get the personalities and the work over in the ring at the same time. But Jeremy, your thoughts on this topic and how the NXT division for the ladies is going thus far, heading into Stand and Deliver?
I feel like when Tiffany Stratton left, they had plans lined up for everybody, and then they kind of had to piecemeal figure it all out when she was kind of removed from the equation. And they just kind of had to be like, well, we're just going to move all these other people around. And it's just been kind of like square pegs and round holes for the characters and their character work. I remember I was watching one of the segments and there was Kiana James and Jasmine Nix and JC Jane and someone else. And it's like, you're all the same person. I was just watching it and it's like, you're all mean girls. You all have one characteristic of one ultimate mean girl. Y'all just need to like merge into one, and you'll just be you'll be Sasha and you know, Charlotte all rolled into one. It'd be great, but they're not going to do that. I don't think they have the ultimate babyface. I think Roxanne Perez is going to be, you know, a heel for a little while, and I'm not sure they actually need a babyface. It's a development territory when someone manages to rise from the rest of the crop, that's when they'll start, you know, developing and having that direction. But I don't think anybody was really there. I've been watching the last couple weeks and it's just, they're all in the same position and they're all looking to find the spark to their character / the ring work. And, you know, you got Lash Legend with Trick and you got, Fallon with, I guess the Virgin, as Brian Alvarez calls him. Briggs, is that what? Josh Briggs and Jensen. It's Jensen that is the Virgin. They all have something going on, but it just kind of feels like nobody has main event energy. You know what I mean? Like there's no babyface woman with that main event energy, and they're waiting to see because the people that they had lined up got called up unexpectedly, and it's just like they're figuring it out as they go. I kind of figured Julia might be the person that eventually unseats Roxanne Perez down the line, but that's so far away that it feels like they'll be treading water with Roxanne doing her own heel I Rule NXT Empire like storyline.
Yeah, it's kind of bleak right now because Julia, that's not going to be probably into close to the fall or the end of the year when she gets. Maybe. It's possible. So I don't know. It's going to take some time. It's it's pretty bare bones. And just to think for years, the NXT women's division was this brand strength. And right now it's one of its weaknesses. Unfortunately, they've completely gutted the tag team division. Those titles are gone. And you have a lot of lukewarm baby faces on the side of things that I'm not buying into right now. And it's kind of sad. And the work rate's there for some and not for others. Personality is there for some, not for others. Mm-hmm. It's kind of the inverse of everything right now. Hopefully it gets better soon. But Scott, your take on the state of the NXT women's division.
I kind of touched on it a little bit on the chat, but for me, you know, it's all about finding that balance still. You know, it's the same thing that we talk about when it comes to NXT. It's still about finding that balance. You think about when Becky Lynch came down, who was mingling with Becky Lynch? Who was wrestling Becky Lynch? Who got elevated by Becky Lynch? And what are they doing now? Tiffany Stratton's on the main roster, doing her thing, never looking back. Will probably never come back to NXT, has no reason to. Kiana James, another person. She was mingling with Becky Lynch. Everybody, you know, we were talking about her potentially having a match with Becky Lynch. She fell off. Like, she's nowhere near that main event scene. Nobody's really talking about her. She doesn't really have a prominent storyline. And then you got Lyra. Lyra's in essentially a poor man's Mickie James, Trish Stratus. We know HBK loves to recycle some of these old feuds. So the people that were supposed to be elevated and honestly were elevated. Like, I think every one of them I mentioned gained something from working with and working beside Becky Lynch. They're not doing anything now with that title. Lyra's by herself. Who else was elevated with her? You know, who was being built up while she was being built up? You know, and it's the same problem they have on the main roster when they're building up these baby faces and they get that big win. Who was that heel that you were building up on the side, you know, making that same beeline so that way they intersect there? It's the same thing here in NXT. And I think that's why it's so important to keep that main roster person down there. That's why for me, with the roster they have right now, Roxanne obviously as a heel, but Blair Davenport to me is the person you build this roster around. I think she's got the most she has the most control over everything, as far as she's probably the most well-rounded they got out there. You mentioned something about the baby faces and who could be that baby face. I think Kalani's got a lot going for her. I think she's got a lot of good traits going for her, and she's somebody who I could definitely see the crowd rallying behind. And somebody else who I think had that energy, was making good strides, and then got hurt, Sol Ruka. That's someone who just came back. I think she's somebody who can fill that gap. But you are right. They don't have that lead baby face. They don't have, like, Roxanne was that lead baby face for a long time. You knew who the top baby face was on the roster. You knew what it was. Thea Hale, I think she's got the energy. She's got the fire to fill it. She's probably got the best fire on anybody on the roster. I mean, when she fires up, the crowd gets right behind her. She's just not ready. You know, she's just not ready as a wrestler to fill that spot yet. But I think if I had to pick, those would be the three women that I think have the most, at least, to fill a top babyface role in NXT.
I feel that as well. I have a question. Because I had to look up somebody, because I forgot they existed. Because I have not seen them on TV in a very long time. And
John
I did
Cena? Wendy Chu.
Wendy Chu. I think she's hurt.
I have not. She's asleep.
She might be asleep. But they've been on WWE Level Up. And I looked up this person. What the hell happened to Stevie Turner?
I don't know who that is.
Exactly. Scott, she's been gone off of television after a quick debut at New Year's Evil 2023. He's forgotten that she existed. And I just remembered, where the hell is Stevie Turner, the Twitch gamer that was a heel?
Oh, yeah, I remember her her little pre-match.
They made more money on Twitch than at NXT.
Well, hey, if the check's cleared, right? That's all that matters.
At first, I thought it was the chick
Rose
with the sword.
Did not take off their clothes this time either.
Oh, to my Carmen Petrovic? I actually kind of like her.
Yeah, I thought it was the chick with the sword you were talking about.
I kind of like her. But she's been on TV. Stevie Turner has not been on TV in a year except on NXT Level Up when she faced Kalani Jordan. So that's the only time I know this Stevie exists. I don't know where she went. She disappeared, and we never saw her again. Choices. But yeah, that's how this division goes. We had a person legit disappear off the screen as if they never existed in this timeline. It happened. And she still works there, just on Level Up. But I agree with you. I agree with Jeremy. I feel as if it's some work that needs to be done. But I want to circle back. If you see someone right now on the main roster who could help NXT on the women's side, who would you send down?
For me, I would probably send down Natalya and Tegan Nox. You're not doing nothing with them on the main roster. They're not in the tag division. You don't have anything singles-wise for them. I think Tegan Nox could come down and maybe give that division just a little bit of a boost, just a little bit of name quality. Natalya, you know what you're going to get with her. So those would be the two names that I would probably call and take down there.
How about you, Jeremy?
Naomi?
No, not right now.
I mean, you could do both. She could be down there and up at SmackDown. I think the division is too thin that if you bring somebody from Raw or SmackDown, it brings down their star power without being able to elevate the talent, because the talent isn't that good right now in the ring in NXT. And so there aren't simple patches like that that you could do at the bottom end of the roster. There's capabilities at the top end with Roxanne and Blair and a few of the others, but, you know, they're in a rough spot where they have to do the backstage segments. They have to do all these skits to get these people over because they're not ready for the ring. It's just, that's it. Like, you're getting these Instagram sketches and you're getting, you know, Ariana Grace giving Gigi Dolan a makeover in the back. And you're just like, what is happening here? It's just because they can't go in the ring and give you the in-ring product that, you know, when you watch NXT or Raw and SmackDown and get an 8-minute match, like, you are getting a professional level pro wrestling match. You're getting the entertainment and the extra stuff at NXT because that's what they're cultivating their character to be while they're getting better in the ring behind the scenes. It's just, you know, 30% of the roster is the work rate and 100% of the roster is learning their character.
Shout out to Aaliyah.
Wherever she may be, shout out to Aaliyah. And for the Blair Davenport thing, I like that choice, but she does nothing for me as a personality.
She's not a face.
She's not a face.
She's not a baby face whatsoever.
No, that it does not help. And I'm going to be very blunt and obvious. When I see Blair Davenport, all I see is me missing Jamie Hayter on my screen in AEW. That is all I see. Like, where is Jamie? I hope she's feeling better soon. Come back.
She's just been toiling in NXT Davenport for...
Yes.
We're like 4 years now?
Yeah. Between NXT UK and this. Yeah, for sure.
She left New Japan. She was originally part of the United Empire with Great Okan and Will Ospreay back in 2020, and she joined NXT. And here we are 4 years later after NXT UK, after breaking her leg, after character switches, after repackaging. She needs more presentation, but a baby face is not what she needs to be right now.
Agreed. Definitely. We'll see how it goes. It seems like it's going to be some patchwork moving forward in the months to come for this division. Hopefully it comes up because it has potential, but we got some fixes here and there that they have to address post Stand and Deliver. As we get to some more highlights from NXT, the LWO has been great benefactors of being back on NXT. They're great on the show. On SmackDown, we don't see their greatness, but I see the greatness of Joaquin Wilde in particular, leaping off the backs of men and doing dives on the outside. I love them on NXT. I hope they win this Triple Threat Tournament pack. I don't know if they will, but when they're on this show, they are a standout tag team. And in this case, I would love for them to stick around because they bring so much life and energy to their matches. They made Out the Mud look really good on Tuesday night. They won. I don't know if they're going to advance to the finals of this thing against the Wolf Dogs. We shall see. But I really love them. I love Wild. I love Cruz del Toro as well. They bring a lot of energy to their matches and they liven up the crowd, which I appreciate. But Scott, your take on this tag team match as LWO advances in one tournament on this show and not the other on SmackDown.
Yeah, they're a very good team. This is a good match. It's probably the best that 3-6 Mafia has looked since I've seen them. So, you know, watching them versus the Beastie Boys was really good.
I cannot with you with these names. The Beastie Boys where? The Beastie Boys
you're right.
Where?
You're right. Catch Republic is more the Beastie Boys than yes, they are. You're right. You're yes. Absolutely right. You're absolutely right.
Sounds like Keela's just jealous of the Beastie Boys.
No, she's right. That's a good call. Catch Republic is much more Beastie Boys than those two.
Yes, they are. Leave me alone, Jeremy. Leave me be.
I'll give you that. I'll give you that one.
Thank you. Thank you. Jeremy, your take on this match with the LWO and Out the Mud.
I didn't have nearly the affection that you guys had for it. It was a great match. I'm just laughing at LWO and Alpha Academy getting their consolation prizes after being left out of WrestleMania. It's like, hey, we'll see what we can do for you about Stand and Deliver, guys. Come on. We know you've been working hard. Why don't you come on down to NXT? Why don't you come down to Stand and Deliver? Get a little breakfast, and then you can show up in your suit backstage at WrestleMania and not have to do much. But come on down to Stand and Deliver. Otis. Tagawa, LWO, come on by. Hang out. This is your time to shine. So, you know, good that they're finding spots for these guys going into those weekends. You know, I don't think anyone is truly, truly expecting the full roster of WWE to get a prime spot anywhere on the card at WrestleMania. There are people that have TV matches and only TV matches. They're not on pay-per-view, and the expectation. So giving them a little bit of Peacock PLE time for some of these guys, I kind of like that idea, and I'm here for it.
Me too. I like it as well. And everybody's trying to get that hustle. Hey, if WrestleMania didn't work out for you, Stand and Deliver might be your ticket to WrestleMania Saturday. And then we're all get on the bus to the stadium, and then you're getting your suits, you're getting catering, and you eat real good, and you say you're there, and that's what's important.
Oh, just get them pancakes.
Yes.
So real quick, if Stan and Deliver is the consolation prize, what are we calling Bloodsport?
Participation award.
Wow. Not any participation award, because there's only one participation award that I have saved on my phone still. It is the one and only Miz Appreciation Award, his certificate with him and Marie saying you tried. I do love that very much. That is my trolling meme for anybody that wants to participate and get something for at least trying to do something at a WrestleMania related event, even though it's not going to be WrestleMania itself.
That man about to win him a title this year. So
no, he's not.
He's
not
to try and do that. I can tell you that.
He will not.
Kiwa, I know that you have this whole thing with the Miz, and I've been listening and all that. You just gotta accept it. It's very much a reality.
No, it is not. I will not listen. If you
and
have
here,
to come
hey,
back,
you know what? Miz is riding on the coattails of R-Truth. This is what's happening
what
right
is.
Here.
It is what
and
it.
It's like if he wants to just like hang on and hang on to the rocket that R-Truth is on and go for and hang on for dear life. God bless the man. It's a fine place to be at WrestleMania for what his it's by far a double digit appearance at WrestleMania, right?
Oh yeah,
he's got way more than 10 WrestleMania appearances.
Yes,
so like, that man got going on at home. Let that man have his moment.
How many WrestleMania appearances has Miz been in which he's been a babyface?
He was a babyface versus Shane McMahon.
Okay.
So there's, I think that's, and he was a babyface when he won the IC title because he lost it the night after when he was a babyface and they were booing him versus Wade Barrett. So those are the two times that.
Or was it that a different year that he won it the night after from?
So that was the year Zack Ryder won it, the ladder match. He won it the night after. The other year he won it at WrestleMania and lost it the night after to Wade Barrett.
See, this is why you have a WWE podcast and I don't.
Miz is my guy, and the only reason I remember
understand that, but the deep cutness of this, I don't think you understand. You are like 2% of the WWE audience that can invoke this kind of knowledge. Like, take your victory lap, man.
Yeah,
I'm going to check this at some point later on. And I'm going to expect you to be completely right here. And I'm just like, God damn.
I hope so. I hope so after that hype you just gave me. I hope I am right.
But this is a big babyface moment potentially for R-Truth and The Miz. And I can't believe they managed to make it like manifest this into some type of reality. If you had told me in like July of last year the plan is to get R-Truth and Miz potentially as the tag team champions at Mania, you'd be like, what crack are they smoking? But look at us now. Who would have thought?
We're gonna have Kilo over here gushing over Mike in his new title that he's gonna be walking around with. Two belt Mike. Multi-belt Mike.
She'd be like, but I want a DIY. And I was like, we know, Kila. We know.
No.
Mike DIY'd it himself.
No, no, no. Actually, I will say I wanted the Street Profits, but they're not going to do it. And I wanted the Kreez and not even the match. But because you guys have been annoying me for the last 5 minutes talking about The Miz and him winning this match at WrestleMania, a word popped in my head just for Scott because he is such a Miz fanatic. He is now, as you have noted, that he has a great recess of memories, Jeremy. He is now the official Miz-storian of the rap.
Wow. Wow. The Miz-storian.
Yes.
It's like, you have the historian, but you also have like this weird Mandalorian thing that like, I don't know why I'm trying to like incorporate the hat he's wearing right now.
I don't mind the name. I might have to change my name right now. Let me see. I got to figure out how to spell it.
Will it make
M-I-Z-T-O-R-I-A-N?
Mistorian. Scott the Mistorian. That is going to be his new name.
That was pretty impressive, Kilo. I tip my hood to you.
Thank you. I have my moments of greatness when I come with catchy names. And if that makes the clip of the day on YouTube, Mistorian it is. As we get to another tag team match NXT this past Tuesday, the No Quarter Catch crew, we had Charlie Dempsey and Miles Bourne versus Axiom and Nathan Fraser. I enjoyed this match too. Axiom and Nathan Fraser, they are so great as a tag team. These men are incredible. The dive Axiom took, like, honey, don't go through the announce table. You're diving too far, but he made it through. And then Nathan is so great. Like, their speed, their agility, their technique is so great. And they had a really good match. This is the best showing I've seen from Dempsey and Miles Bourne to date in this tag team setting. Really enjoyed them in this setting here. And we had Fraser go up top, Phoenix Splash, Axiom hits the golden ratio just out of nowhere, clean to get the win, and they move on to this triple threat pack challenge heading into Stand and Deliver. I want them so badly to win, but it probably be the Good Brothers because they beat Tank and Tank on NXT. I don't really want to talk about the match. It was all right. It was fine. It existed. It was whatever. But I want to see, in a perfect world, Axiom and Nathan Fraser versus the Wolf Dogs at Stand and Deliver. I'm not going to get it. I am very upset about that, but I will pray very hard for a miracle, Jeremy.
Pray for a couple of miracles, because that would be a lot more fun of a match. It's just, when you saw the Good Brothers show up a couple weeks ago, it's like, you knew where this was going. You're like, oh, they just gotta give Bron Breakker a team that doesn't make him look like you lost to those guys. And it's unfortunate for Axiom and Nathan Frazier, because they did have a great match on this show. Although I'm not sure about that gimmick where they have, like, the speed flash, the speed flare when they come out there. It's a little too NXT for me, and yes, we are watching NXT, but you need to be focusing on gimmicks that'll transfer well to the main roster, and I am not 100% sure that those gimmicks are going to go well, but man, as a protege of Seth Rollins, Nathan Frazier is delivering. Axiom, got to get rid of that name, but other than that, it's better than A-Kid. I like everything about it. Thumbs up segment, thumbs up team. Just gotta tweak a few things and away they go.
Yes, Axiom, I will say this, a gorgeous face that does not need to be hidden. It's gorgeous. Does not need that mask. He's not a luchador by trade. Take off that mask. He is gorgeous.
He looks like a kid.
He looks like a kid. A fresh face, baby face. He is really handsome. Take the damn mask off. My God.
Just like a kid. Weird.
Very funny, Jeremy. Since we're loose and fast with the names now. But yes, Nathan is great. Like, he honestly made the best decision of his career, because, you know, there was this battle with him. Do you stay in AEW or do you sign with WWE? He made the best decision, because honestly, he would have been lost on the shuffle. It lost in the shuffle in AEW. For all we know, he might be on Ring of Honor every Thursday behind a paywall at this rate. I'm being real. So I think he made the best career decision for himself to be in WWE. He's getting TV time. There's a path to the main roster, and his mentor's right there too. That is something that is going to be a great avenue to success, not because of Seth, but because he's so great at the same time. But Scott, your take on this match between Axiom and Nathan Fraser versus the No Quarter Catch crew.
Yeah, the match was good. They're a really good team. Remind me a lot of, they remind me like the modern day London and Kendrick, as far as they just create a lot of movement. They're incredibly fast. Nathan Fraser might be the fastest guy on the roster from, I don't know. Him and Bron could have a nice little race from rope to rope, but I think they're a really good team. Match was good, and I look forward to whenever they do get called up to the main roster and they get to really show off some of that in front of these bigger arenas and some of these better teams.
Yeah, and they'll pop the crowd because they're so great, and they will get over via their in-ring work in due time. Quick shout out to the Wolf Dogs, because they had matching Adidas fits on. Appreciate that. Tracksuit wearing. Love it, as they will go after Otis and Akira Tozawa next Tuesday because they went in on Stand and Deliver. I will tell you this right now. That will be a great match because you're going to get like 205 live Tozawa because when he works, when he is serious, fantastic work in Otis and Bron Breakker. They're going to bring the heat too. And Corbin, like I've said before, he has been great on NXT. This run has done him many favors. And I do still hope that one day soon he and Braun can take the Wolf Dogs to the main roster because they're great. They really summoned something special. And I do want them to kind of continue to work together on the main roster in some capacity. But Jeremy, your take on this?
I watched the Corbin promo with Braun about dinner, you know, where they went out to dinner. And I was like, I know you're playing the fast and loose and kind of carefree and having fun with it. But for whatever reason, this was the one that didn't work for me. I was just like, you come off like a weird whiny dork. And I'm not even sure this is even a, like a cool promo other than just like, oh, we're just going to bullshit and like ad lib and be backstage. And other than that, though, it's the most fun I've ever had with Corbin. I'm bummed that the Bron Breakker experiment in NXT is coming to an end because I see more and more promos for him on SmackDown. But yeah, when we talk about the NXT highs and lows, the Wolf Dogs are definitely one of the major highs.
Definitely. I've grown to love them. Like, I love Baron Corbin in 2024. God help me. I do. And it's like the same case with my least favorite Wolf Dog moment was a few weeks ago when Breakker was really, really loud in that promo. Like, baby, turn it down by like 12 notch. He was so loud. He was so loud and over the top. So we've all had like our moments of like, that was my least favorite Wolf Dog segment, but I still love them. There are some clunkers here and there, but the chemistry is still everything. And Scott, your quick takes on this before we move on to our main event.
Not a lot to add. They're good. The match with the Good Brothers will suck, but
yes, it will suck. It will suck. I will not be watching that match if it happens at 1 o'clock. You still have other things to do. It'll be on the Peacock replay, and I will fast forward if I have to in the event the Wolf Dogs lose, which they probably will, and that make me angry. To the Good Brothers of all teams. But now it's time
to an end.
Oh my God, seriously. Blech. As we move on to our main event of Trick Williams versus Noam Dar in the main event spot. And we had Lash Legend looking forward to seeing Trick or trying to screw him over some way, form, or fashion. And this was a good match. I think that in moments the crowd was kind of in and out of it, but I enjoyed it for the most part. You know, Trick is a star, obviously. They love him. And he got the win with the Trick Shot knee, which I liked. I love the finisher. The knee hits every time. Got the victory. After the match is over, he wants Carmelo Hayes in this ring face to face. And we have Melo security come out and they surround the ring. And we have this shadowy figure looking like Carmelo Hayes. He does not show his face because in the ring, we have a security guard who is actually Melo. He attacks Trick. They beat him down and he sends his message heading into Stand and Deliver. And I thought this was an effective closing segment to get heat back on Melo after getting jumped on a couple of weeks ago by Trick. But Jeremy, your thoughts on the hype for this match, which should probably be the main event of Stand and Deliver. And in some ways, in a perfect world, it could have been for the NXT Championship.
I don't get why it's not, unless they're continuing to draw this whole thing out. Definitely seems like a possibility. I did like the continuity where when Carmelo was coming through, he had his three security guards, but he walked in such a way where the last security guard, if you thought there was a fourth, you could see him. You could imagine behind him, but there never was. And then all the other times there was ambiguously three, and then when they came out in the very end, there were four. I thought that was pretty clever. And then they got some other guy to be the plant to be Carmelo at the very end. I don't know how I feel about this entire Stand and Deliver card. It feels like they wanted to spread it out to make sure that everyone got spotlight instead of delivering the biggest main event that they could. And they've done the biggest main event that they could at these Stand and Deliver shows in the past, but with Ilya Dragunov and the Mob Boss doing their thing together, it just kind of feels like they wanted to have two main events in the men's division and neither one of them feels like it has the potential to stand out from the other because of the equal footing that they wanted to give to both. And yes, Ilya Dragunov is fantastic, but when you are looking at this and thinking of all of the knockdown, drag out fights that he has, you are not that excited about the match with Tony D'Angelo as much as you are tricking Carmelo. And that's just it. So is tricking Carmelo going to be the final main event of this show? Is it going to be an unsanctioned match? Is the title match for the world title going to be like top of the card or second from the top? These are all questions because based off of how they booked and what they've made important, I've got real questions about.
I got questions too. And Dragunov is really the thread that holds Trick and Melo together. They've been the central focus of NXT and that title for months. And the logical conclusion could have been a triple threat match between Melo, Trick, and Dragunov at Stand and Deliver. And Trick still gets to pin Melo to win the championship because that would be the most heat. I think it would have been a better match because it would have been physical bruising. Melo and Trick would have got the whooping by Dragunov. Everybody would have been bruised up and bloody. I think it would have been one of the best matches of the weekend if they went in that direction. As I said last week, I like Tony D'Angelo. I think that Dragunov would bring something out of him. But to me, the true connective tissue would have been a triple threat match for that championship, and Trick still gets to pin the guy that screwed him over in Melo. That will still be the satisfying conclusion. You protect Dragunov, you pin Melo, Trick's the champ, and everybody's happy because this entire Send and Deliver card so far, it feels very eh. It does not feel like I have to get up early in the morning and get ready to watch the show by noon. It feels like a show that I can legit play on Peacock after WrestleMania Saturday or WrestleMania Sunday before the pre-show kicks in and I can just knock it out and review it on the wrap for everybody Sunday night. That is what this show is, and that should not be the case. I have seen Stand and Delivers on the USA Network before WrestleMania, and it was better than this presentation right now. But Scott, your take on this, and do you even feel excited about Stand and Deliver in a couple of weeks?
I haven't really felt excited about any Stand and Deliver, to be honest with you. So I don't know if that's, you know, the right question to ask. Cause it's at the end of the day, it's still Stand and Deliver. Like, I wasn't excited about Dolph and Braun, but I wanted to see it. Like, I wouldn't say I'm excited. Like, I'm excited to see Roman and Rock versus Cody and Seth. You know, I definitely think there's levels to it, but the card, it is what it is. Like, I don't think last year's Stand and Deliver card was that great. You know what I mean? Like, I feel like they've never gone out of their way to make the cards as big as they possibly could. And I don't know why that is. I do think Trick and Melo ends up being the main event. I could see it being unsanctioned. That actually makes a lot of sense because then whenever Trick wins, Melo could say it doesn't count on my record, so it never happened. Classic heel stuff that we see all the time whenever they do the lights out unsanctioned match or whatever HBK is going to decide to do. They're not going to do it, but it's HBK. I could absolutely see Trick and Melo eventually having the first ever Hell in a Cell, whatever they might have in NXT. I could see that being the eventual, because I think them not having the title involved does kind of say we're going to probably going to extend this a little bit longer. So I could see that happening, but excited, no, but I am looking forward to seeing what the match looks like. Cause that's a big spot and moment for Trick Williams in particular. Melo's been there. This is a big moment for Trick.
Absolutely. And I'm looking forward to it. I love Trick. I love Melo. It's going to be a great match. It could have meant more with higher stakes, but we'll see how it goes as we make that transition to Friday Night SmackDown on Fox, live from a sold out Fiserv Forum in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. And I want to talk about something that's happened on the show. One of the best side storylines on this show heading into WrestleMania season, and that is the internal struggle of Bianca Belair trying to help Bayley because she remembers, the North remembers, to quote Game of Thrones, because Bayley came back from her injury nearly 2 years ago, and she targeted Bianca Belair with the creation of Damage Control. Bianca has been tormented and beaten down by this crew for the last couple of years. And Naomi has returned to WWE, and she has a deep connection with Bayley, and she wants to help her friend despite everything that she's done. And I love the fact Naomi said, girl, I love you, but I wasn't here for that, legit. And this is a different time and space. I'm going to help my girl out, but I need your help because Damage Control is trying to take us out one by one. Can you put your beef aside and help me? And she goes for a match against Io Sky, the women's champion. And I really enjoyed this match. Naomi laid her shit in on Io Sky. My God. Because you're going up against Io Sky, who lays her shit in always. And Naomi was delivering elbow strikes and kicks. And she was in it. I loved it. The suplex spot, the heat seeker spot. I loved it all. Really good match. Io is excellent as always. I love their chemistry. Best showing I've seen of Naomi's is coming back to WWE. Love the gear, love the hair. Everything was perfect for her on this night. Really love the action. Damage Control comes out to interfere. And it should be noted, Io Sky beat down Bayley backstage before this match. So she was of no help or availability during this beatdown. After we had Damage Control come out, they distract Naomi. That allows Io Sky to hit the over the moonsault for the victory. And they beat down Naomi. We have Asuka blow the mist in her face. And then Bianca Belair comes out, tries to make the save to no avail. She's on top for a while, whooping ass. The fans love it. And then she gets jumped, gets chop blocked, gets beat down. And we have Naomi trying to cover Bianca, but there's no Bayley, and they kind of talk about it backstage, and we have Bianca trying to flush Naomi's eyes, and then Tiffany walks backstage, throws shade, and walks away. So that's another connective story, possibly post-WrestleMania, because I would love to see Tiffany versus Bianca Belair. That would be a lot of fun down the road, but I do love this storyline of Bianca Belair being hesitant to help against Damage Control, but she will eventually in due time. I love it. Great match. And on top of that, as we keep alluding to, Jade Cargill is now a member of the SmackDown roster. She makes her official superstar debut next Friday at the Mohegan Sun in Connecticut. And I am looking forward to that. And our dream scenario of the trios match of Cargill, Naomi and Bianca Belair versus Damage Control is a possibility at WrestleMania. Scott, thoughts on the match, the beatdown, and what could be in 2 weeks at WrestleMania 40 in Philly?
Yeah, it's all going according to plan. I called this a couple weeks ago. Well, I think everybody has pretty much seen the tea leaves of this, but they'll eventually get the numbers game, and then Jade's going to be the one to come in and essentially be the equalizer for this entire thing because she has no beef with Bayley. Just like Naomi laid out. Me personally, I'd love for Bianca to just be like, yo, I did it. I tried it. Got beat down. Not doing it no more. I'm done with it. I'd love to see her just wash her hands clean and be like, I'm undefeated at WrestleMania. You think I'm gonna throw that on and put that on the line for this? For Bayley? Nah. Give me Tiffany. Give me Tiffany. I'll take her. So that's what I would like to see happen. But we're not going to get that. Instead, we're just going to get Black Magic on one team. So I'm looking forward to that. But the match was good. I'm not a big Naomi fan in the ring. She doesn't do a lot for me. It's just everybody's got that person, and she's that person for me. So it was okay.
All right. Jeremy, your take.
I didn't know where the subplot of the excess of Damage Control was going. And I like that they are timing this out for the unity of Bianca and Naomi and Bayley, potentially Jade, maybe somebody else, who knows, that there is this unification factor. I also like that it appears that Asuka seems like she's fine, which was a little bit of a concern going into things. So there's that there. I can honestly say that this feud has been the redheaded stepchild of the title feuds going into Mania. And they are holding water for the entirety of SmackDown in delivering good main events and taking up television time. But for whatever reason, because it's sharing time with The Rock, because it's sharing time with this main event segment, it just does not feel like it's coming off as big a deal as Rhea or Becky or any of these other title matches. And I don't know why that is. I wish it were different. I hope that there maybe the incorporation of Jade into it like gives it a spark. But at the same time, I want this to be about Bayley and Io. And I feel like at some point that kind of got lost in service of the entire SmackDown Women's Division. And it's like a weird criticism, but I feel like the focus has been like they just lost focus somewhere.
I totally get it. I feel the same way. I think they were focused after the Royal Rumble when Bayley won the Women's Royal Rumble and then Damage Control talked shit behind her back in Japanese and Bayley figured it out. And until The Rock became like a weekly presence on SmackDown, I felt there was a focus with Bayley and Io Sky for that championship at WrestleMania. Now, what's really unique to me about this situation is the fact that I think all of these moving pieces, unfortunately, it's still peaking. And it will not be peaked at WrestleMania. I feel like they need more time. And they're going to rush through the story with a week to spare. And boom, here's WrestleMania. And I think, unfortunately for them, they're running out of time. I understand where they're going. I see it. I like it. But I feel like it's not peaking on time. And that they needed more time heading into WrestleMania. And they're doing a lot of this stuff a wee bit too late when it could have been done, honestly speaking, maybe a month ago versus 3 weeks before WrestleMania, when you're trying to get Bianca Belair on board. You got Jade coming on, and that's going to be a slapdash thing next week if that is the case. And then boom, here comes WrestleMania. It's happening all too quickly when I think you need maybe 3 more weeks to get you there, but they don't have that luxury, unfortunately.
Yeah, the timing of the service of this feud, in spite of everything, feels like it got shoehorned to fit around everything else. And I'm not sure why that is, but it does feel that way.
For sure. As we now get to our main event, it is a face-to-face confrontation between The Rock and Roman Reigns. Spoiler alert, I did not like this segment very much because the dialogue given, I wasn't feeling from The Rock or Cody Rhodes, because I feel like the beef as of right now is with Cody Rhodes and The Rock. And I normally love Cody Rhodes cutting promos. I didn't love this. I felt like he was just talking about The Rock and Roman being intimidated by his cousin and who is really running stuff in the bloodline. Is it the final boss? Is it the tribal chief? And then Roman talking about how dumb Cody is to trust Seth Rollins, his little brother, the Shield. They're bringing up Shield memories. Like, I get it. I do. But I thought the material wasn't there. It wasn't hard hitting enough for me because it wasn't personal. And I thought they did a better job being personal last year, and all the heat that's very personal is between The Rock and Cody Rhodes. I feel that tension. I love that tension. I appreciate that tension, but I do not feel that with Roman Reigns and Cody Rhodes. And Roman, when The Rock is not there, he should absolutely be the star that takes up the air in the room and demands the acknowledgement and have everybody on their feet and not getting the what treatment. That is something I don't like, but that's based on content. If it's good content, you won't get the what treatment. If it's so-so, you're going to get it. And he didn't do much to shut it down, unfortunately. And then we have the ruse of, oh, I really lied. Did you really think I wasn't going to bring my people with me? We have Solo and Jimmy coming out. But then Cody has backup in the form of Jay and Seth Rollins to end the show, a face-to-face confrontation, no physicality involved. And that's all well and good. But I just felt like that was just a very blasé ending to the show that was built up for several days on Monday Night Raw and on social media. And then we get this. It was all right. It existed. It didn't move the needle for me heading into WrestleMania at all. And it still makes me look forward to the night one main event versus night two, where that should be where the heat truly lies, Jeremy.
Yeah, you're not wrong. They're building up the feud. Oh, dogs got wild. Dogs agree too.
Right on cue, he says, "I agree, Keela. I concur. Yes."
The everything is building, And this promo was like Cody telling Roman, every trick that you pulled on me last year will not work. You know, like, I see through you. I see your game. And they're trying to elevate the tension of night one as the drama stakes for night two, because I feel like if they just try and introduce the same things over and over again that they did last year to raise the stakes, people are going to see through it. So they're trying to sidestep that level of interaction and change it. But the meat, the focus of the feud is suffering, but it almost doesn't matter. You know, like, you got The Rock, you got Roman, you got all the other stuff. So it's just what it is. This is everything that I want WrestleMania to be, is the Seth, Cody, Roman, Rock feud. And they're making it up as they go. It feels like they're going left and they should go right on some of these things. And I'm almost just like, maybe it doesn't matter. Maybe the aura of everyone involved has just elevated to this point that it's going to succeed unless you just will it to fail.
That is very true. I think that we have to kind of skip ahead tonight too. And I have seen people wanting the most outlandish, overbooked WrestleMania main event ever. So Cody finishes his story. And I think that's the rare case when overbooking is a blessing, that you want the most outlandish bullshit you can possibly see. Bloodline rules, turns galore. I want it. I actually want the Backlash 2000 chicanery of Stone Cold coming out and doing the most to help The Rock win the championship for Triple H. That's what I want to see. And then I'll be happy. I want the mess. I actually want an overbooked, just absolute mess of a WrestleMania main event. I'm here for it. We need it. We can skip ahead to it, because I think at this point we're running out of things to say. And the only meat that's left on the bone is Cody and The Rock trading barbs, because there's nothing else Roman can say. And there's nothing else that Cody can say to each other at this point. The sauce right now is The Rock. He is the thing that heats it up. And we'll see how it goes when he's in Brooklyn next Monday for Raw, the final Raw before WrestleMania. But Scott, your take on the main event angle between Cody and Roman Reigns.
That whole thing was just about setting up the final shot of just kind of showing the team squaring off face to face, setting up the in-game battle for whenever Captain Cody America has to open the portals for everyone to walk through. As Thanos Reigns stands in the ring and looks with his army behind him. So that's all that whole segment was all set up to kind of show all of that coming together. One thing I do want to touch on, though, Roman Reigns doesn't need to do anything as far as the promos, any of that. Cody still needs to bring in and do his thing. Roman doesn't need to do anything. Roman is 100% on his John Cena thing. Remember when John Cena was the top guy and everybody was coming after him, you know, everybody kind of was saying a lot of the same things. And that's kind of how Roman was tonight, that on Friday night. He was like, yo, you already did this. Like, you've done this before. Give me something new. We've been here before. This is the Roman I like. When he starts calling people out for saying the same thing that everybody else says, for doing the same thing. I like this Roman. This, I'm not worried about you. Do you know who I am? I do. This is me. This whole main event. This is the Roman I love. So it was fine. I thought Roman came across as he should. He shouldn't be worried. He shouldn't be concerned with the tag match and then him already beating Cody. This is how he should be carrying it. So I liked it. It was fine.
Okay. I thought it was in the middle. Just, I just need one more WrestleMania sell job and I'm good to go. But I think the matches at this point sell themselves and they'll be heated and they'll be great for night one and two. And I expect Cody, come hella high water, to finish the story. It will be Avengers Endgame. It'll be a cinematic Marvel masterpiece put together by WWE. And he will have $20 million worth of fireworks going off at the Link to end WrestleMania night two at 12:30 a.m. Hopefully, not that late.
I've got a question for you. And I don't know if we're going to get another chance to get to this. But The Rock threatened Seth Rollins to, I could take that title away from you. Do you think on night two that Priest cashes in and costs Seth the title or Drew the title? And that is helps elevate the tension that anything can happen. And Cody does not, is in jeopardy going into the Roman match. Because I'm on my bullshit that Priest is cashing in on Mania.
Hey, let me tell you something. You know, that actually kind of would circle back to the promo Seth had with Drew about this all being bigger. And even if, you know, don't forget, they're still going to come after you eventually, too.
Yeah.
And, you know, Rock walking Damian Priest out, you know, with him, with having the brief, walking him out to the stage and Damian coming down, cashing in on both of them. That could set up Drew McIntyre being the guy to come out night two and maybe being that missing, that piece that gives Cody's, you know, Cody's group that edge. Cause he's like, I'm for myself anyway. Screw you for screwing me earlier. I don't care. And then he claymores everybody and just walks out.
How else do you continue the story for Drew McIntyre other than you take away the thing that he wanted the most at the moment he wanted the most and you give him the story for next year?
And you know, and I will say this, Jeremy, to what you're saying, he's not going overboard heelish, you know, like no. In his promos and stuff like that, almost to the point where once this feud is done, maybe he, you know, maybe he's right back to being on that babyface side. So there could be a lot to what you're saying about that as far as where Drew McIntyre fits into this whole thing, because Damian walking out with Rock would be something, because it's not like Judgment Day and Bloodline haven't worked together in the past before anything.
Right. Understand. It's there.
It's a good one.
I love it. I love it. I love this idea so much. It'll be a full circle moment for Seth to get cashed in on after 31. He did the cashing in. After he did the cashing in on at 31, one of Michael Cole's finest calls, the heist of the century, and then it happens to him in that main event. I love to see it because the clock is ticking. That Money in the Bank briefcase has been in his possession for almost a year. It is time for something to happen, and it could happen at the expense of poor Drew McIntyre, who would have all of the smoke for people that have screwed him over to rob him of a proper WrestleMania moment. He is one of my MVPs of this year, not only in promos, but on social media. It is immaculate shade he's throwing at various people. I cannot wait to see what he does in Chicago on Monday versus CM Punk on the mic once again. He will be a tremendous troll as we now wrap the show with the best damn television match we saw in WWE this week. We talked about some great tag team matches and great singles matches across NXT, SmackDown, and of course, Monday Night Raw. Jeremy, as our special guest, your match of the week from WWE.
Cap tip to Nia Jax and Becky Lynch. I'm giving them the match of the week credit. That's a hell of a match for not trying to hurt one of them when Nia has a reputation of trying to hurt everybody. So there were a lot of great matches. Runner up being that DIY Creed match, but I'm going with the women's main event at Raw.
Yes, very good match. Scott, your pick.
I got the tag match. I'm gonna flip it. I like the tag match a lot. I thought they got the show started off on a good note, and it was capped off by that great women's match as well. So
I am torn. NXT had a couple of really good tag team matches. Love DIY and the Creed Brothers. Love Nia Jax and Becky Lynch. So I am going to pick out of all of those fine options, DIY and the Creed Brothers. Love that match on Monday. Best match I saw from WWE this week. But it was a good week because there were several matches that stood out, even on NXT, which has been one of my chores to get through. But it's been much better this week versus the last few weeks, heading into Stand and Deliver, which is still a very so-so card. As we now put a bow on this week's wrap right here on the Fight Game Media Network, I want to thank WrestleMania, Jeremy Finestone, and the Mysterian Scott Young for joining me as we recap the week that was in WWE.
That's my hand symbol for Mysterian.
Oh my God, it's official. It's a thing, and I hate you both. I can't stand
you. Big up to the Miz. Big up to the Miz.
Boo. Get well soon, Maurice. We love you.
It's the awesome truth, Keela. Confront it.
I am not confronting
nothing. I feel like I'm throwing up an Illuminati sign or something.
No one will ever see this clip. It'll all just be a legend.
Yes, a legend that is in the archives that no one will ever see. But thank you guys. As always, as that road to WrestleMania winds down, we are under 2 weeks away until WrestleMania 40, the biggest WrestleMania ever. And we got a show to go, two shows to go, in fact, until we are there, until we have arrived at Philly for WrestleMania XL. So until then, enjoy the week ahead for WWE across Monday Night Raw, NXT, and Friday Night SmackDown on Fox. For myself, Jeremy, and the Mysterian, that is going to be his new name moving forward. Not Salty, not Perky, the Mysterian, Scott Young. Until next week, enjoy the week ahead, people. Take care. And bye-bye as they throw up gang signs to wrap up the show that you've never seen.
I did a peace symbol. What are you talking about?
Listen, I saw what you did. That was not just peace. Scott's throwing up Mizana gang shit over here. Like,
he's on an island all on his own. I was just doing the peace out. I do it on my own show all the time.
Enjoy the audio version, my loves. Until next time, take care and bye-bye.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.